Hi, I'm Lorna Slater. I'm one of the co-leaders of the Scottish Green Party. I've also been working with the Scottish Greens Women's Network on our Take a Stand campaign to get more women into politics.
I'm Alice Mumford. I'm the Communications and Engagement Manager at Engender, which is Scotland's feminist policy and advocacy organisation. For full disclosure, I'm also a member of the Green Party and have experience of standing in elections, but I'm here as Engender.
Thank you so much for agreeing to speak with me today, Alice. I want to speak to you as a sort of expert on matters around gender, about what is going on with women in politics. We have, to my opinion, too few women in politics. We have to do all this extra stuff to help women into politics. I think that that's really important to do. Not everybody thinks this. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. So, I mean, first off, it's not just your opinion that there aren't enough women in politics. It's a mathematical opinion. if you think we should have representative politics, we currently do not. We do not have enough women in any of our chambers of power. So in Holyrood, in local councils, at Westminster, in the European Union, in community councils, women's voices are not there. And that is not because women are underrepresented. In my view, it's because men are overrepresented. And it's also really important to note that when we're talking about representation, we're talking not just about gender, but about race, but about disability, but about sexuality, but about trans status. So when I say men are overrepresented in politics, I mean white, straight, non-disabled, cisgender men are overrepresented in politics. And that means that they are making the decisions using their lived experiences, using their priorities, using their interests to lead the things that our country focuses on, that leads what we spend money on, that leads what we talk about and what we see of national importance. So first off, we don't have a good democracy if we're not if we don't have equal representation in politics, and we're very far away from that. One thing that is particularly frustrating for feminists or anyone involved in trying to get women involved in politics is this idea that we've already achieved it because we have a female first minister and many of the leaders of parties, particularly in Scotland, have been women. And people say, look, how on earth can you say that there's not enough women represented when our leader is a woman? And of course, that's fantastic. Having a woman in charge does not mean, of course, we have feminist policies, as the UK can attest to. But it also hides what's going on underneath that, which is less than 30% of our local councillors are women. It's the people making decisions around schools, around leisure activities, around roads, around all these things that affect our day-to-day lives. So it's not enough just to look at who's speaking in First Minister's questions, but actually what's happening below that.
I'm just going to interject there. So I work in engineering, something which is nothing to do with schools or hospitals or even things we remotely associate with femininity or gender. And women are wildly underrepresented in renewable energy policy, in making things out of big chunks of metal, steelworking, manufacturing. Women are wildly underrepresented in these areas as well, and in the policy making in these areas. So it's something that's across industries and across society.
Absolutely. I think engineering is a really good one to point to, and it's about where we make decisions, and it's an example we often use around gender budgeting. So, and the idea of who's making decisions and the idea of investment. So the way that budgets work is that if we build a new Forth Road bridge, that is seen as investment because it helps people who commute, who are normally men, people who commute in cars, normally men, to drive faster. It helps create industry for architects, engineers, construction workers, massively dominated by men. And yet we don't see investment in childcare as a financial investment. That is just seen as a drain on our public purse, when of course childcare enables
what is
absolutely
more of an
everything to function
than our children.
Absolutely.
It blows my mind that we don't consider investing in our young people and investing in healthy families, in healthy home life, in allowing people other than commuters to get around the place. How is that not investing?
Well, absolutely. And I mean, even from an economic point of view, you look at the unpaid care work in Scotland, which is still massively done by women, it's about a third of the GDP if it was calculated in those terms. But it's just not. So there's the sort of economic argument, but there's also absolutely what do we value? Why do we think it's more important that You know, why do refuse workers get paid more than nursery workers? That whole classic. So it, you know, politics affects everything in our day-to-day life. So there's the actual decisions that get made, and they get made differently when you have different voices in the chamber, because people have different experiences, they have different things they focus on, they have different ways of working. But there's also obviously just the general importance of representation, that you can't be what you can't see. And if we're told that the most important people in the land are these old white men in grey suits, then what does that tell us about who the important people are in our workplaces, in our schools, all these sorts of things? So there's also just the general idea of who we see as an authority, who is held up to be expert. And I think that's, you know, that's something that's been really interesting, all the political shenanigans that have been happening over the last few years, this idea of rejecting expertise. But we still do see that the idea of a politician as a white man in a suit, despite Nicola Sturgeon, you know, and despite Keir Starmer, despite Ruth Davidson, we still see that white man in a suit. And so, you know, onto the sort of second part of your question, I guess, about people that think, well, you know, we've got a meritocracy, why do we need to make all this effort to get women involved? Well, A, we clearly don't have a meritocracy if you look at the state we're in. But that also assumes that, you know, all the old arguments, well, men are just naturally better at these things.
Women don't want to be exactly. Women have other interests, yeah. They're not interested.
So the idea that we're, you know, the reason we need to make more of an effort to improve diversity is to enable that meritocracy, because currently actually what's happening is that men are able to access politics because they don't have the barriers in their way that women do. And it means, again, for voters, we're not getting a fair choice. We're getting this mediocre man or that mediocre man, rather than a mediocre man and an exceptional woman, or even a mediocre woman, come to that, you know. So
it's something that an engineering friend of mine said, is that we'll know we have equality in engineering when we start getting mediocre women.
Absolutely. You know, and so that idea that, yeah, men are innately better at politics or more suited to us, is because literally everything in the world tells us that, it tells a white man that he can do whatever he wants to be and he deserves to be on those benches. And pretty much everything that all the messages women are faced with is that you're not good enough. So there's that idea about representation, who's a politician, but there's also just the actual, the more sort of tangible barriers. So I mentioned childcare. Women do vastly more childcare and unpaid care than men do in Scotland. So that means evening meetings are much more difficult. We have a real problem of presenteeism in politics. So you are worthy of election if you have flyered the most, or if you've been to all these meetings, or if you've stood on the street stall every Saturday afternoon for the last 17 years. Not so easy when you're, you know, when you've got caring responsibilities, or when you face misogynistic abuse, when you're at hustings. Again, if you know, it's, I've said it's not just about gender, it's also about wealth, it's about class. You know, all of these things require disposable income to get the bus to meetings, to get the childcare, to eat on the go because you're rushing between your work and a hustings, whatever it might be. Women are generally poorer than men. And so all of these, so doing the extra stuff you mentioned, which is both parties doing it, or anyone wanting to get women involved in politics, but also women themselves, the extra work that's required is only to level the playing field. It's not extra. It's balancing it out. And that's just vital to everything, to try and have a healthy democracy, and to enable us to get closer to this, the 50-50 mark, which, you know, would be a start. I mean, I'm for all women, but, you know.
So with this Take a Stand campaign that the Women's Network has been working on, there were two different threads to that. One is to sort of normalize standing for election and nomination. It's not something where you have to put your head above the parapet. It's all of us working, all of us doing it together. It's normal for women to stand, and we'll support each other. And we don't stand against each other. We stand with each other. That was part of the idea. And the other part was to help women build their profile and visibility. So it's my opinion that in order to be elected, in order to get votes, that voters need to be able to see you, that women need to have visibility and profile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think, and again, it goes back to that idea, and this is not saying that women innately do things differently than men. But there is, politics is very much geared around male lifestyles, male ways of doing business, if you like. It's very confrontational, and it is all about profile. And while we're sort of operating within that, I'm sure lots of people listening and myself would like that to change and have a more collaborative, more collegiate and more consensus-based politics. But that is currently the way it's run. And so, of course, women do need to fight harder and be helped by other women candidates, by parties to do that, to raise the profile. We know that women are far more likely to be invited on news shows, on TV debates. They're far less likely to be asked to write columns in the newspaper. All these things that, again, men many times get handed to them. Women are far more likely to self-censor on Twitter, because we get rape threats when we don't self-censor and we say unpopular opinions, or we voice anything about politics. So there's all these ways that, in the way that women navigate the world, where we're told to shut up and reduce our visibility, you know, we're told to not put ourselves out there for fear of violence, and violence against women is a thread that goes through everything women do in their lives, and is a cause and a consequence of women's inequality, and can't be ignored. But everything we're told is to, you know, make yourself smaller, seen and not heard. You know, you see it from childhood and up. So it's very it goes against what we've been taught, to put yourself out there as women. And of course, you don't always get a good response. You know, women are bossy, pushy. You know, men are natural leaders and authoritative. You know, the double standard is huge. And, I told not to swear on this podcast, but the B word is thrown around, you know, where women politicians are called Bs a lot. So we have to put, the visibility is not being handed to us. So we have to get out there and make those opportunities. And they don't always have to be in, using inverted commas, which isn't helpful on a podcast, but politics, you know, it's about everything. And again, that's where the real world and politics bleed into each other, because in all spheres of life, men are given more of a profile in public and women in private, you know, has ever been thus, in terms of men make decisions about national budgets and women control the household purse. You know, it's age old, a sort of private public, and so again, that's the reason why more work has to be done, and we have to be openly saying women stand, because every other message says women don't stand.
Excellent. Thank you for that really good explanation of that, because it's something that concerns me, is the visibility aspect. I talk about this all the time, but I went to the Antarctic earlier this year with 90 women from around the world, and they were largely academics, mostly scientists. And it's a major problem for women in that sphere as well, is the visibility, is getting the opportunities. It depends on what papers you've written, depends mm-hmm. on which conferences mm-hmm. you go to. And, you know, we've all seen these conference manuals, you know, it's very hard mm-hmm. to get that sort of visibility, to be seen to be an expert, to be seen mm-hmm. at all. And specifically with politics, my view is that people can't vote for you if they don't know who mm-hmm. they are. So supporting women with visibility in terms of encouraging them to take volunteering opportunities, to share their experience with the party, to speak up at meetings, to me is a big part of breaking mm-hmm. down those barriers, that active visibility that I think is so important to help women into politics.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely true. But I think there's the flip side of that. And again, that's putting a huge onus on women to make more of an effort to deal with the patriarchy, which is what we do every day. And so, of course, there's only a certain, you know, at the end of the day, there has to be a certain point of, yes, women have to get out there and they have to do these things. But there are also structural things we can do to change and challenge that. And you're talking about scientists, just made me think, invisibility of women made me think about the distractingly sexy women scientists, you know, so women were...
Hashtag dress like a woman thing.
You know, this idea that even when we are being visible, we're being visible in the wrong way. So, you know, Lexit on the front page of the Sun, when you've got the Prime Minister and the First Minister discussing Brexit. So, there's the sort of issues that come with visibility, and how that is then, once you are seen, you know, you're often treated in a misogynistic way. And that's where I think that's where parties and bodies, so whether that's the parliament or the city chambers, have to step up and make those things easier. So is it about changing? Do we really need 10-hour long council meetings, which means people can't have the childcare they need? Is it about calling out misogyny when it happens and having a really strong social media policy? Because it's not just enough to say women stand. It's enough to say, you have to say women stand. And when you do, we will be there all the way. And I think that's a really important message for the campaign you're running, is that it doesn't end after the nominations deadline. It doesn't end after the hustings. It has to be about long-term support. And that's something all of the work in gender is part of the Equal Representation Coalition, which includes lots of other equalities bodies looking at race, sexuality, and disability. And again, that's been a message throughout, that you can't just look at the top level. You have to look at the activist base. As you say, you have to build up this profile, this visibility. But you also have to look at the structures that surround that and enable that. So what does volunteering mean? Women are far more likely in political parties to be doing the invisible volunteering. So
Taking the meeting minutes.
Taking the minutes, yeah. The pastoral care, which is a huge, helping people when something's gone wrong, or listening to people moan, making the tea, doing social media, all these things that you can work around, childcare or other constraints, part-time work, these sorts of things, which doesn't give you the same profile, even though, so a woman might be spending 20 hours a week doing spreadsheets, for a party, inputting canvassing data, whereas a man can go out for 1.5 hours on a Sunday morning, tweet a picture of them doing canvassing, say, I had great conversations on the door. Of course, that's important too. But the profile that man gets is so disproportionately different than a woman who maybe says, oh, well, I've done all this work for the party, prove it. So there's also something that the parties need to do to maybe promote the work that is being done by women and disabled people and all, the folks that aren't tweeting themselves climbing up tenement stairs on a Sunday morning. And so supporting them to be visible and not just saying, well, sorry, actually, if you don't like getting up and speaking, then you're not set for a politician. Mm. And part of this is a problem with politics, and we all know politics is terrible in many, many ways. But
trying to get women into it.
It's awful, don't do it. No, do. If you look at the job of a councillor, for example, what we're told to be what you need to do to be elected as a councillor. So first, to get selected in your party, and then to get elected, is to be a very good public speaker, have lots of knowledge about politics, and be able to use good rhetoric and make a blasting speech and speak at a rally. You need to go and chat to people a lot. You need to always be able to answer emails and tweets and Facebook messages within 10 minutes, or your rating goes down. All these sorts of things. That's half of being a councillor. And yeah, you can stand up in the chamber and make your play for more investment in play parks. But there's also huge amounts of being a councillor, which is casework. So which is someone coming to you and saying, I've got a problem, and which is you supporting them, reassuring them, working with staff, finding out the housing policy for that particular area, getting it sorted, chasing it up next week. Now, that is not glamorous, and that is the work that people, that's life admin that people do all the time, and women do more of.
And hugely women secretive, you're very good at, yeah.
It's essentially parenting for your constituents, So, but that is never, ever talked about. That when we say, oh, you've got a real qualities of a politician, what do we mean? You're really good at arguing. And how many times have we heard men say, in hustings, oh, well, I'd be good at this because I love arguing. That's terrible quality for actual productive politics. So there's also something about shifting that, the visibility is important, but what tasks are we holding up and putting on the pedestal then when we're saying you need to be visible doing them? And I think that's an issue with politics as a whole, with parties, in that I don't think, the public school style of politics isn't getting us very far. So actually, what are the skills we need, and what do we nurture? What do we hold up and say, you'd be a great person because you're kind? I mean, I'm not saying all women are kind. I'm not saying all men are nasty, but
it's about changing all of politics.
We have such an unnuanced view.
So, I guess the way I would interpret what you've just said is that, adding a few more women into politics is not the be-all and end-all of fixing the system.
Yeah.
It's one aspect of fixing a system. Something that I found in my life, so in more than 20 years of my career, nearly, I've always been the only woman engineer in my office. And except for once, I worked for 1 year for one company which had a significant number of women engineers, and there seemed to me to be a sort of tipping point around 40% where it changes from it's weird to have women around to it's perfectly normal. And it's something that I think professions like law and medicine have seen, and teaching was 100 years earlier than those two professions, but where it used to be something by men and is now considered to be perfectly normal for women to do. But politics isn't there yet, science isn't there yet, and engineering isn't there yet. So that's kind of my experience of it, that we need to get to this tipping point, and then at that point maybe we don't have to do all this extra stuff because it will be considered normal.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's one of the things I find quite heartening, is how quickly these things can shift. You know, and the example often used is, you know, pink being for girls and blue for boys, which, you know, in Victorian times was the other way around, and things being seen as women's careers and men's coding. You know, you're talking about tech. So, you know, the images of the, you know, Hidden Figures and the NASA engineer with the code, which was seen as drudge admin work. And then as soon as it got the profile and the prestige, it became, actually, maybe men want to be coders. So, you know, that's heartening. These things can shift, and it doesn't take a huge amount. With politics specifically, and gender's big advocates for quotas, the point at which countries looking at lots of international examples tend to get to organically without quotas is about 40%. No, it's very difficult for countries to get to 50% without some sort of balancing mechanism. It evens out about 40, and that's great. It's a lot better than councils are doing.
Yeah, I think we're not there.
But with MSPs, with MSPs, the first year of the Scottish Parliament, we had more women than we do now. So we've gone backwards, and we've stayed stagnant for the last two Holyrood elections.
That's
we've
so
stayed
depressing.
Stagnant, exactly. And it doesn't have the balancing mechanisms. So this idea that, oh, it'll just right itself as soon as it won't. We need the mechanisms to get there, and whether that is. Scotland currently doesn't have the legislative powers to introduce quotas, but hopefully it will be able to at some point. But obviously most parties in Scotland use some sort of quota or balancing mechanism. And for many people, the argument is fairly clear on that. Women 50-50, who I'm on the board of and have to look at their Twitter account, there's still obviously lots of people that think it's a terrible idea. But I would say the case is fairly well made that we need these structural changes, because it doesn't just happen on its own. You do get to this levelling out point. And then there's also that, again, to go back to visibility, which has been, a key theme of this podcast, is the idea that there was a study done in the US looking at sort of crowd scenes in movies or in rooms, in conferences and things, and you ask people how many women and men they think there were. And if there's around 17% of women, people generally think it was equal numbers.
Oh, that's crazy.
And if it's 50%, people think it was just full of women.
Wow.
So, you know, we don't even see, you know, we don't even see the imbalance, because
we're used to seeing
we spot one woman.
We see it as
normal.
But,
yeah, exactly. So, so that's sort of
that's
a tangent.
Really,
but the idea of visibility, like, even, you know, a lot of people would look at a picture of the chain of Holyrood, which is, and, you know, a lot of people think, oh, 40%, that's pretty good, you know, 38%. Mm. And it does sound good until you flip it the other way and you say, right, so that's over 60% of men, you know, so because we're so used to it being rubbish.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? So we've been running some Q&A sessions with potential candidates, and the number one worry of women candidates is getting abuse on social media. Mm. That is what everyone is really afraid of.
Yeah, I mean, with good reason. They will. I mean, and that's why I always feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about getting women to stand, although absolutely women should stand, because we should not lie about it. We shouldn't sugarcoat it and say you're going to get an easy ride. You will not. You will have to deal with a lot more crap than your male colleagues will, undoubtedly. I mean, on social media, there's all sorts of good guidance around, you know, block and don't feed the trolls and all those sorts of things. But that doesn't take away from the fact that you will. You're misogynists will be able to get into your phone and, you know, give you a misogynistic tweet at any time of the day. And again, that's something that a lot of the time you just hear the advice that is, oh, just ignore and block. Not good enough. That is not good enough. That is victim blaming, frankly. We need to be taking much more serious action on this. And that means that male councillors, male politicians need to step up and step in when this stuff happens. And we've seen some real, you know, you talked about sisterhood and normalising the idea that women support each other. And there's been some really great stuff with women MSPs, you know, having each other's backs from different parties, calling it out when they see it. And men often don't. And I appreciate you feel uncomfortable in the age of Me Too, but like, no, I didn't swear. You know, you're stepping in, and it's about the party stepping in. So if you see something, if you're not sure whether to engage, send a DM to your colleague and say, or text them. Don't look at your Twitter. Let me log in and delete the stuff. You know, when in the abortion referendum, Repeal the Eighth in Ireland, one of the great things, I went out there to do some campaigning, and there was talking about the sort of gender balance within the campaign, because there were so many men, and we don't get men campaigning for reproductive rights in the UK in the same way. And I was asking how it worked, and you know, how, and they were like, well, the women run the campaign, they have the profile, the men deal with the social media. So they see the photoshopped images and they delete them. They are the first line of that defense, really, you know? And so just those things, that doesn't work for everything, obviously, but stepping it up, and parties pursuing, reporting it to the police, checking in, having pastoral care that isn't always done by the women, for the women. You know, if a woman is elected, if anyone's elected for a political party, that party has a duty of care. And, you know, I don't think that's something any party has really got right yet. So, yes, women are going to face that more if you choose to be on social media. And again, that's where the balance between this visibility comes in. You know, do you have to do all of that? Maybe you don't. Look, you know, maybe you find other ways to do it. And you know, being prepared for that allows you to protect yourself a little bit more, and having separate pages for your political profile and for your personal ones. But essentially, that is a structural issue, and it's not your fault. And I think that's, again, something really important that women need to know is, it's the patriarchy. That's why you're having to work so much harder than your male colleagues. That's why you're having to explain things twice as many times as they do. That's why you're facing the abuse that they do not face. And that's why they probably don't understand how much it impacts on you. So men, get educated, talk to your colleagues, figure out what to do, believe them when that happens, all the really, really basic stuff. But parties need to really step up and have a good policy, have a publicly available policy that says, if you're getting abuse, this is what you do. You talk to the media liaison, you decide, do you want this to be a press story? Because that is a press story, you know, woman counsellor getting stalked, getting raped, threats, whatever. Do we want this hushed up? Do we want this to be a story? Don't do anything without their consent. Figure out the support that they need. Check in on them. Send them a cup of coffee. You know, whatever it might be. But take it seriously. Mm. It's not frivolous. It is people's lives, our social media now. Have someone with them when they go to hustings, if that's what was needed. And also the institutions themselves. So again, the city chambers, parliament, and obviously the Scottish Parliament's doing a lot of work around the sexual harassment issues at the minute. But looking at these things in a holistic way and saying, these are all the different, you know, issues and attacks that women face because they are women and they are daring to be in politics. Women, there are, you know, there are lots of good things you can do yourself to help with that, but essentially other people need to be stepping up, and that's what encouraging women to stand is. It's so much more than saying, do you know what, you'd be a great politician. It's, you'd be a great politician and I've got your back for the next 5 years.
So I had a really interesting email this week. We had one of our trans women members say that she was going to stand, and I wrote back and said, wonderful, I'm delighted and terrified for you. Because of course, if you're a disabled woman or woman of color or trans woman, the amount of abuse is quadrupled, you know, it's pretty awful. And she sent me back a lovely email which said, here's what I need. I need people, I need other trans women around me, but I need other people of different genders around me, because I need some people around me who aren't specifically targeted that abuse to kind of help me kind of laugh it off and put it away. But then I also need people who are targeted that abuse who can share with me the feeling. Yeah. So I thought that was a really practical way of saying, look, this is going to happen. I'm aware that this abuse is out there, and here's what I need to solve it. So thank you for telling me all that stuff, Alice, because as co-leader of the party, I'm very much hoping to put in place these sorts of systems, because I do not want any of our women members or, you know, non-binary members suffering any more than, you know, what we can cope with. So Alice, just to kind of wrap up with one last question, what would you say to any woman who says, oh, politics isn't for me?
I would tell them that they are probably already doing politics, and politics with a big P is not that different than politics with a little p. And I mean, some women will be right. I mean, they're not everyone suited to being in politics or want to be, and that's totally fine. I would say the same to a lot of men as well. But absolutely every woman should give it a go. It is a great experience, but do it with your eyes open. I think that's what I'd say. There's obviously a balance between scaring people off, which we absolutely don't want to do, but also just saying, it's great. Once you're a politician, everyone loves, you know, it's not that, and we all know that. And I think the example of the email you just shared is a really good one. It's identifying what you need, and not everyone will know that, and that's where the party comes in to try and help out. But absolutely, women, give it a go. And there's so many different ways to be involved in politics. So you can stand, you could be a campaign manager for someone, you can support someone. There's community councils, you can dip your toe in the water. You can run in case there are any more snap elections, you know, where you know, you'll know your party, you might not be that likely to get elected in certain places, certain elections. You can try these things out, dip your toe in the water. And give it a go, absolutely. But make sure you're badgering your party to give you the help you need.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for your time, Alice.
Can I give a very quick plug?
Yeah, please.
So we have a tool in Engender called the Equal Representation in Political Parties tool, which is a sort of online assessment of how the party's doing in six different areas. So from selection to running meetings to engagement. And it's anyone can use it. And so at branch level, party level, or just individuals, it's equalrepresentation.scot. And it gives you a bespoke sort of action plan for how you can improve things for women, people of colour, disabled people, LGBTI members.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lorna.